Ellen said, I must introduce myself. So my name's James. I work for the Columbans. I live in Birmingham. What else do they need? That'll do, won't it? I thought we'd introduce our speaker slightly differently this morning. We're going to play a game of true or false. So I need you all to find a way of showing me true. So can you make a T with your arms or your bodies or... That's very good. Excellent. That's good. We've got little T. I like that. That's good. Excellent. And you could also shout the word true, maybe.
True.
That's good. Excellent. And then we need a word for false. A thing for false. Oh, this is the harder one. Yeah, something that looks a bit like, oh, that's nice.
That's a good one.
But that almost feels like you're booing, Christine, but we'll go with that anyway. All right. So
Do that later as well.
I like that. That's good. We've got some Fs appearing. Excellent. Good. Right. So we start like this. The first one, we thought we'd get the really important things done. Christine is a big fan of celery. True or false?
False or true?
So I need to see some signs and hear some noise. Oh, is it true, false? You can tell I do youth work normally, can't you? Yeah. And is that true or false?
It's false. Celery is the devil's toenails.
The devil's toenails. She said that so passionately last night. Right. Okay, Christine has worked for Progressio, ChristianAid and CAFOD, where she is currently serving as executive director. That's true. But true or false, her career began... Actually, I heard someone say to her this morning, didn't you work for CAFOD? Which I thought was quite nice. Or didn't you used to work for CAFOD?
Used to work for CAFOD as well.
But true or false, her career began as a diocesan justice and peace field worker. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
Yes, and that was in the booklet. So if you didn't know the answer to that, it means you haven't looked in the booklet yet. All right, now it gets more fun. All right, in the 90s, Christine worked with the Columbans and was instrumental in the controversial decision to end the always popular Columban calendar swimsuit edition. True or false? You are correct, it is false. She did work for the Columbans, but we have never used Columbans posing in little mankinis to raise money for mission. But
yet.
Should we consider it now?
Yes.
Welcome back, Ed O'Connell.
Woo!
Oh, he agreed he would stand up and pose, but he didn't. Here we go. Welcome back, Ed O'Connell.
Hey!
There we go. Right.
Which month should he be?
Mr. December. Chami, I need you to prepare the visual aid. Right. It says here, Christine is inspired by CST. But true or false, this stands for cheese sampling and tasting.
So celery!
If you could bring the... there we go. True or false, CST, cheese sampling and tasting. The cheese will be available in the bar tonight for anyone who wants it. Yeah, it is false, it is false. Well done. But Catholic social teaching then, Catholic social teaching... often known as the church's best... Just put it by Christine, that'd be ideal. Thank you. There you go. It's very cruel. We'll move it away. There you go. That bit. How did you first discover Catholic social teaching?
Part of it was CAFOD. But also, I was involved... My main sort of formation, if you like... students, so it's one of the Cardine movements, and I was, after I'd left school, I worked for YCS, and one of the things that I had was we were hosting a European meeting, and I had all of these people who were from different parts of the world and different parts talking about all these things, subsidiarity and all this, that and the other, and I was like, what's all that? And then they said, this is Catholic social teaching, and I was completely blown away. The pedagogy of the oppressed, that's Paulo Freire as well, but, you know, it's all of this stuff. So, you know, Brian, what? The church is talking about this? So, yeah, it's fascinating.
Thank you. Given her role at CAFOD, her personal commitment to Catholic social teaching, and it says here, ending the injustices of poverty, inequality, and environmental exploitation. Although I need to say that she was in the queue for the cake last night in front of me, with two bits of cake there. And I didn't get any. Like, but anyway, it says there that she does these things. I think she took one for someone else. It's all right.
I should have given you mine, though.
She shared it.
I?
No, you shouldn't. True or false, Christine leads her parish CAFOD group. Come on, let's. Some of you have stopped moving hands. Most of them think false. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know what that says about
you. It's my face.
Christine?
It is actually false. I think it's quite appropriate for other people to do things. I do quite a lot. My parish, I do a few bits of music in my parish.
Yeah, you lead the children's choir, I believe.
Do.
Yeah. So I thought that would be a nice little question there about kind of, well, how do you balance the personal and the professional in this vocation? It must be a vocation, being chief executive or, was it executive director of CAFOD?
Yeah, something like that. I think it's also... I guess one of the things that I would say is that I do often do things for CAFOD in my parish, but I think it's also a lesson for all of us, you know? Mm-hmm. And also when we are, if we're serious or serious about kind of working in collaboration, sometimes it's important to step back and enable and empower other people to do things. And I know I'm apparently a bit of a personality, to kind of push other people out of the way, and so it's important to not do everything. But there's a fair amount of sort of guilt in feeling that actually we should be. But I think we just have to balance that. It's a constant balancing act, really, in terms of, you know, family commitments and also looking after yourself. But you know, that lovely phrase, which is kind of like a bit of a personal manifesto, which is the reading from Micah, you know, the act justly, love tenderly, and walk humbly with your God. It's also that sense of kind of, you know, looking after yourself is part of that relationship, our relationship with community and our individual relationship with God. And there's times when God gives me a kicking, but the Lord says, just chill out, girl, you're all right, you know. I'm not here to save the world.
Yeah, I think a lot of us could relate to that. It is a challenge. All of that was in replacement of me reading out her biography. So we now start. And we kind of, when we met to plan...
This is planned.
Yeah. it sort of evolved. So what you're going to hear is sort of scripted and sort of not, and we'll kind of change as we go along. And we've sort of phrased it as it's a conversation reflecting on CAFOD's ongoing journey, discerning response to Laudato Si, the Sustainable Development Goals, the cry of the earth, the cry of the poor. We're trying to draw out learning that might be coming from CAFOD that might be useful for others, us as individuals, us as a movement. I think that's the journey we're hoping to go on over the next roughly an hour. And towards the end, we'll move to a kind of throw it back to everyone out there and say, taking away from this and ask for feedback on that. So that's the plan. Now watch us go off plan. So the first question we had, we'll start on script so that,
okay,
that it's easier when we go off. The world seems pretty depressing at the moment. Can we be confident that something like the SDGs can offer...
Well, Brian talked last night, didn't he, about the importance of hope. And it can feel very challenging to have that hope, you know, because as a world we are failing, our world leaders are... Rather than leaving no one behind, they're leaving the promises behind. And as Brian talked last night, as a world, we're really not on target in terms of those SDGs. But he also reminded us of that amazing scene and the fact that we had not just the SDGs, and we had the Paris COP, and we also had last year. In 2015... I was at a meeting in the run-up and the preparations for the Paris COP, meeting with Al Gore, which was quite an experience. He's an amazing kind of speaker. And he has three questions. And it's about the it applies to most things. And he was like saying, the first question is, should we? When we're thinking about any kind of change, should we? This is that moral imperative or that burning platform, you know. And then the second question is, well, can we? Technical ability, do we have the resources? You know, are we just simply able to make those changes? And the third question, which is the absolute knockabout of the park, is the will we? Political will. This is the desire and this is the ability to sort of put the challenges and the changes and the theory into practice. And I know, I think as a world, we're very clear. We've got that clarity that, yes, we should, you know, and there's people, so many people, 8 years and in fact throughout my life, huge numbers of people saying, yes, we absolutely should, many of which in this room, and yes, we can. We have got the technical knowledge, we have got the global resources, but what we're lacking is that political will. And I think that's one of the issues for us, is how do we translate that? So, I mean, I have to say, personally speaking, I think there's hope in the fact that we do have a framework like the SDGs. I don't have a huge amount of kind of there's a lot of resources that's gone into the SDGs. You just look them up on the UN website. There's a big UN process. I'm not sure that I have huge amounts of confidence in that process. I think a lot of my confidence and my hope lies in the people and the work on the ground, people like yourselves, but the work that we do, the people that we're with, the church, as particularly as part of the global Caritas network, as we're trying to put that commitment and that solidarity into practice. And leave no one behind. That's that phrase within the SDG framework. And it's deeply theological, of looking out, you know, the lost sheep, the fact that the Good Samaritan stopped, all those sorts of things are really critical for us in terms of leaving no one behind. So I think my hope doesn't come out of interactions in the communities and the thinking and the planning we're all doing.
Mm. You've kind of started in this theme already, but... And I suppose Brian covered it a lot last night, but if you could just build a little bit on the link between Catholic social teaching and the SDGs, just explore that a little bit.
Yeah. Rather than necessarily saying the SDGs themselves come out of Catholic social teaching, but I think, you know, as Brian said last night, you know, Laudato Si reminds us about the importance of the interconnectedness of issues. So the 17 SDGs, but they're not, and they've got their own action plans, they've got their own... targets. And like with anything, when you've got something as big as tackling global inequality, you've kind of got to, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You kind of have to slice it up. So apologies to the vegetarians.
That's not NJPN policy. We're not, there will be no elephant at conference for free eating.
No elephant slicing today. No. But you know, we've got to be able to have plans. You've got to be able, you can't just deal with things in a very vague kind of top line way. But nonetheless, Laudato Si reminds us that, you know, we're all interconnected. And for CAFOD, the context of that, or the concept that we use is from Laudato Si, called integral ecology. Connectedness. Therefore that we're called to recognise and act on that deep interconnectedness between people, between the environment, between our daily lives and our wider cultures, you know, all sorts of levels. Us to do that level of analysis. It doesn't require us, as we were saying before, to do everything on everything, because we simply can't. But to do the analysis and understand how these things fit together enables us to be able to say, well, okay, from my sphere of influence or my organization's sphere of influence, the skills that we've got, what can we focus in on? What do we bring? What's the kind of contribution that we put on the table? But also, what are some of the challenges? I mean, integral ecology also says that, well, we've got to be interconnected, then there's a responsibility. And one of my challenges for the SDGs is that it's still very much around a kind of positive, not aggressive, but it's still a growth paradigm. It doesn't say, actually, some of you have to use resources less or use less resources. And we, I think Catholic social teaching takes it that bit further to talk about structural injustice. Mm-hmm. You know, in our context, in your past, we need to talk about reparations. You need to talk about the fact that some people are rich because some people are poor. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important dynamic to recognise. And if we need everybody to flourish, we kind of have to recognise that those injustices, that structural sin, is embedded in our economics, in our paradigm, in the way in which we see the world. And therefore, you do have to rethink that. Mm. And I'm not taking an anti-growth perspective here, because I think there is an issue about what sort of growth. There's green growth, there's a way in which all need to flourish. But we all know, because we've all experienced it, we experience it in this country as well as globally, that whole mantra that, well, you know, all boats rise isn't true. Some boats rise dam-site faster than others, mm-hmm. and some boats are blinking well sunk in the process. Mm-hmm. So it's about recognising those injustices and inequalities that exist. And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Mm. I think there's something from kind of earlier Catholic theory, I suppose, before Laudato Si, the words like oppressor and oppressed and exploitation, and maybe some of the analysis that we might see, for example, in the Just Fair from Global Justice Now, that's got more teeth than the SDGs. They're almost a little bit sanitised.
I mean, and they are to some extent, because that's the nature of... They're working at a big political process. I mean, I know from UN climate change negotiations that, you know, you'd have arguments about you'd have an argument... I mean, the big argument in 2015 was the at least, you know? I mean, that it was at least 2 degrees, because that was the only way that we could get 1.5 onto the agenda. And now 1.5 is the agenda, so that's good. So you know, there's something about recognising that the UN and SDG processes are, yes, they're ambitious and aspirational in that vision, but they're not talking about the necessarily the way in which we get there. One of the good things about the SDGs, so I don't want to sound like this is a big complete negative on the SDGs, Brian, I'm sorry, and it is very different. So the Millennium Development Goals, as Brian talked last night, that was what the rich countries took on board. The Millennium Development Goals were, we as rich countries, we're going to decide how much we spend on what, and we're going to have those targets and we do them. The big difference then to the SDGs was the fact that it was civil society and it was the voices of countries from the south saying, no, we don't want you to stitch us up anymore. We want to be more collaborative on this. This has got to be not just about what the rich say to us, but it's also about what we say about ourselves. So the universality of the SDGs is a really important shift in us having, as rich countries, having a bit of humility. But there are always going to be political processes, and because of that, there's always going to be a level of well, what works, what's acceptable. You know, to get 195 countries even signed, or 193 signing it, that's ask Brian about the other two. But, you know, the point is that to be able to get them signing up, it's got to be sort of acceptable. And it's got to fit it's got to be bought into. And that's not always, you know, a very strong social justice kind of perspective is not necessarily going to be always easy. And that's why, you know, people and communities are so important in kind of holding politicians to account, because, you know, the SDGs as a vision, what we've not got strongly enough is that roadmap in terms of how we get there, and that's why at a local level or at a national level, the lobbying and the work governments is really important to say, actually, you've signed hold you to account, because we need to get there. So the value of having that framework is huge. It's really huge. So don't ever, please don't hear me, you know, dissing the SDGs. But it's a massive responsibility to all of us to be able to say to our governments, we're not delivering it. But actually, there are different ways in which those goals can be delivered. Are they delivered in a way that's sustainable properly, that recognises the structural injustices in our world, or are they kind of, you know, here's a blank cheque for businesses to do things differently?
Play with that idea of businesses a bit more then. So businesses, corporations set up to make profit, how do they fit within that model of the SDGs? Like?
Well, actually, and it's interesting, I was really struck by Brian's slide last night that showed that the one that's green is the business one. And
in the UK.
Yeah. There's an awful lot of businesses actually that are really they're especially at the moment, you know, there's a huge number of the businesses in the private sector that are actually leaving this government behind, and they're really frustrated at the lack of a political coherent policy roadmap in terms of getting there. They're making money out of, you know, fossil fuels or unsustainable ways of doing things, you know, they're going to hold on to the last possible minute. But business and private sector isn't in and of itself a bad thing. And I think a lot of movement around, you know, different forms of social enterprise, different forms of businesses that can really do things in a much better way. And businesses are much more clocked on to the fact that people care about sustainability. You know, there's a lot more what's called environmental and social and governance, ESG, kind of considerations that are made by consumers. And consumer power is in some respects greater now than it ever was. You know, what Anne was saying last night about the fact that, you know, gosh, we remember when we were all battling to get something like a fair trade logo. And now, you know, you walk down the aisle of a supermarket and it's there. So, you know, that's become much more part of our mainstream, which is great. So I think there is that potential there to be able to work with businesses. There are a lot of good people out there who want to try and kind of push that, and the use of of businesses or the private sector to be able to I think is, especially this one that doesn't seem to listen to people, bless you, that doesn't seem to listen to people like us, but who will listen to business, I think is also really important.
Okay. We'll move from the analysis of the, or discussion of the SDGs a bit towards CAFOD now.
Yeah. But actually, I wanted to, you were going to ask me about, yes, I remember now.
We missed a bit on the script.
We missed a bit. That's
yeah.
Fine. No, because we were going to
talk. This is well practiced.
It's really practiced. We were going to talk about integral ecology, weren't we? Because and I did, and then I forgot that the best people to explain
that's
what
it says video there.
That's right. I know. Yeah, I'm trying to work into it to make it look
it's
like right. I'm planning
it's
it.
Slick. It's
so
fine.
So the best thing, one of the things that CAFOD wants to try and do is to make sure that it amplifies the voice and agency and leadership of our partners overseas. And one of our partners, Caritas Brasileira, are going to on integral ecology, what that concept means. It's in Portuguese, but it's got the subtitles. So if you need to move a bit nearer to be able to see a screen, please go. So can you run the video, please?
Esse conceito que foi introduzido aí pelo Papa Francisco, clica Laudato Si, que é a ecologia integral, representa muito para nós, assim, na atuação do nosso trabalho, né? Na compreensão de como a gente vê esses desafios ambientais dentro do nosso trabalho em emergência. Porque a gente compreende que a emergência, ela não acontece do nada e não vem por si só. Existem fatores pré-determinantes, né? E muitos deles são fatores ambientais que a gente tem que sempre levar em consideração. Ver a ecologia de uma forma integral mesmo, né? Interconectada. Então, uma crise, uma emergência, ela sempre vai estar conectada com desigualdades sociais, com outros aspectos e aspectos ambientais também, né? Que a gente deve sempre considerar aí no nosso trabalho de resposta. gosta de visualizar uma emergência de forma separada. A gente tenta sempre conectar com fatores pré-determinantes e também com fatores sociais, culturais. É fundamental para a gente responder isso de uma forma que acolha não só aquela realidade emergencial, mas a realidade que já vinha pré-estabelecida antes da emergência, né? Então, a gente busca não se ater só às necessidades imediatas e emergenciais, mas também a questões de sustentabilidade a longo e médio prazo das comunidades que a gente busca auxiliar aí nesse âmbito emergencial.
Anteriormente, ela foi fundada em 1956 pelo Dom Helder Câmara, e tal como as outras Cáritas pelo mundo, ela surgiu de um contexto emergencial. Então, da sua atuação com emergências, a gente fala que está no coração da nossa Cáritas atuar com emergências. Mas ao longo de todos esses anos, né, veja, ela foi fundada em 1956, mas ao longo de todos esses anos, com os movimentos progressistas no Brasil, na América Latina e discussões internacionais sobre as mudanças climáticas, sobre a convivência com os biomas, no tema das mudanças climáticas, sobre mitigação e adaptação às mudanças climáticas, todo o tema aí, por exemplo, dos direitos da natureza, dos rios, das florestas, dos bosques, das matas. A Cáritas, ela foi historicamente se aproximando de todas essas discussões. Então, a ecologia integral, a gente também poderia dizer que ela faz parte do coração da Cáritas brasileira.
O grito dos muito também com a questão da ecologia integral, né? A Cáritas Brasileira Ampla busca combater assim, a pobreza, a injustiça social, ao mesmo tempo em que protege, né, o meio ambiente e também responde às emergências. Então, na verdade, aquele conceito de não deixar ninguém para trás, né? A gente, embora se coloque emergencial, existe ali uma situação que não pode ser, digamos assim, a gente não pode se esquecer da situação social, né? E das injustiças sociais, e por isso a Cáritas trabalha muito também na questão da incidência política, para que não só se responda uma emergência, mas que também se possa ajudar essas famílias, né, em situação de vulnerabilidade social, econômica, incentivando que elas de fato sejam autossuficientes, para que essa situação de emergência, por exemplo, não se torne recorrente aí. Então, um exemplo muito que a gente inclusive tem desenvolvido com o apoio da CAFOD é promover práticas agrícolas sustentáveis, né? Então, o projeto emergencial vai fortalecer, de fato, as comunidades vulnerabilizadas, ao mesmo tempo que dá recursos para que essas pessoas possam continuar aí, né? E daí reverter essa situação, essa injustiça social, essa pobreza, que muitas vezes situação de emergência, mas que já existia e que se não for abordada de uma maneira interconectada, é provável que vá se continuar com essa vulnerabilidade. Então, a proteção ao meio ambiente e a existência ao longo prazo para essas comunidades é muito importante para o nosso trabalho enquanto Cáritas.
Essa questão, eu vejo que ela dialoga com a nossa missão enquanto Cáritas brasileira. É um tipo de auto-questionamento que a gente tem constantemente quando a gente trabalha com emergências, por exemplo. As organizações aqui no Brasil, por exemplo, que atuam em emergências, quem delas, o governo, por exemplo, né? Quem delas olha para a pessoa que sofreu aquela situação de emergência, aquele desastre e tal, mas para aquela pessoa que sai da sua casa e agora está debaixo da ponte? são esses questionamentos que a gente tem, né, de acolhimento dessas pessoas super vulnerabilizadas, mais do que qualquer tipo de fazer uma ação estrondosa, né, que tenha muita visibilidade. Acho que a gente tem o nosso maior compromisso nisso, de se questionar quem são as pessoas, de fato, que estão precisando de um apoio, quem está debaixo da ponte, e como a Terra, também integrando o grito da Terra, né? Quais são os gritos da Terra? Por exemplo, é nessa perspectiva que a Caritas Brasileira tem se aproximado muito das discussões sobre os direitos da natureza, através de incidência política e tudo mais. Por exemplo, a gente... no contexto do Rio São Francisco, de apoio, né, de fato, enfim, até na perspectiva do semiárido, questiona sobre os gritos e as dores do Rio São Francisco. A gente tem a vontade de se questionar os direitos do Rio São Francisco, né, com tantas modificações faz na natureza, a Terra também grita. Então, nessa perspectiva que a gente avança, sobretudo na defesa da natureza, de uma forma geral, né? E isso nunca dissociado da defesa das populações tradicionais, das populações indígenas. Caritas Brasileira é trabalhar com populações tradicionais, populações indígenas, guardiões da floresta, os guardiões dos rios, das matas. Eu vejo que essa é a proposta que a Caritas tem com os gritos, né? Os gritos das pessoas que os povos tradicionais e originários que menos contribuem para o avanço das mudanças climáticas, mas infelizmente a gente sabe que mais são atingidos por elas. Então, o nosso foco é muito direcionado nas pessoas em situação de vulnerabilidade social que gritam. E pra...
So, I think Lucas and Tainara really explained that really well. So that integral ecology concept of not doing everything, but of understanding the different factors that are playing out, and hopefully that's there's some resonance from what they've said in terms of your different aspects of work throughout.
Mm. So let's continue exploring CAFOD then. So you've got a new strategy in place, I believe inspired by Laudato Si. Would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, so we've spent a few years reflecting on Laudato Si as an organisation, staff, with partners, with some volunteers as well, and that then fed into articulating our current strategy, which is called Our Common Home. Nice title. And first of all, it's very much about how it's enshrined in Laudato Si, and hearing the calls and the challenges that Pope Francis throws down to us all. And as you've flagged, James, Laudato Si, Catholic social teaching grows and evolves. So it's never just one document. You know, you read Laudato Si, and you read, you know, Populum Progressio. You read Lumen Gentium. There's all sorts of documents in there from the whole rich tradition. It builds all the time. And it's rooted in scripture. So developing our new strategy to say, right, okay, moving forward, we've got four key planks. The first plank is that integral ecology, so that we take that approach and we try to do that to have the biggest impact for people and communities who are the most vulnerable. And I think that that video really expands that really, really well. Mm. And that's also both in terms of how we respond, ask ourselves the questions about where we speak out, how we tackle the causes of poverty. And, I mean, Lucas reminded us there that Caritas Brasileira was founded by... And you don't need reminding, but I'm going to remind you of his famous quote, which is, He was the, when he was, and he said, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no, they call me a communist." So, for those of you who've not heard that before, I'm going to say it again because it's so brilliant. When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist. And the context of Brazil and structural realities there, I think it's the same. And that sense of we also have to ask why, and we also have to address why. And I think that's the door opening that models like the SDGs offer us, because the SDGs is a little bit in the first category. Yes, we want to change. We want to tackle poverty, injustice. We want to make the world a better place. Brilliant. We've also got to ask why is it not the way it is? What are the power? So it's us, our responsibility to speak out, but that the reality is for all to have their potential and to act for the common good. So in order to do that, CAFL feels that local individuals, local communities, people like you, people like our partners, are all critical agents of change. And we're all, how can we be best placed to influence and bring about the changes to global, national and local policies so that they can benefit all? And I think that then takes us into the next step, which says this is about people speaking for themselves. This is about the right to self-determination of people who are poor and vulnerable and excluded has to be supported and empowered. It's their voices that we need to amplify, we need to stand alongside so that they're never ignored in favour of those with wealth or status. That is gospel. Jesus, who turned on its head the values and who are the rich and the powerful, whose voices are listened to. You know, the story of the Good Samaritan is not just about some bloke stopping. The hero of the Good Samaritan was the Samaritan. To the audience that was listening, the Good Samaritan was the most despised enemy of their time. It was like the Daily Mail having a headline going, you know, asylum seeker is a really nice person. I mean, it was absolutely shocking. And we've sanitised that story quite a bit to turn it into the first bit, to turn it into giving food to the poor, not saying, actually, you know, the heroes might be surprising. The voices need to be heard. And it's Jesus is mission and witness with women, you know, again, that's also part of it. The woman with the hemorrhage who was healed. So not only was she physically healed, she was socially healed, because having a hemorrhage hemorrhaging in first century Palestine meant you were absolutely excluded because you were unclean if you were bleeding. So she was no longer just feeling better, she was brought back into community. And I'm reminded of the work that we do in the Democratic Republic of Congo with a place called Central Alarme, which is absolutely amazing. And what they do is they have four women and girls who and boys as well, unfortunately, but who are victims of sexual violence of the war. They are brought, they're listened to, their stories are heard, but their physical hurts are healed, but their emotional, their psychological and their social hurts are also healed because the community is encouraged to welcome them back. So that's integral ecology, the importance of voice. Another plank for us is, which again builds on that, is creating a culture of encounter. So it's really important for us to recognise that it's through coming together that change happens. And that culture of encounter, it's there in Laudato Si, but it's particularly there in Fratelli Tutti, of the importance of not of just getting to know people, of spending that time with people. International development organisations are often wonderful, but they often projectise people. And time again, our partners say to us, you know, we get money, we get funding, but nobody cares about us as an organisation. And that's the difference that CAFOD does, is if you imagine the polo mint, you know, the mint with the hole in the middle, you know, all around the outside, you've got all of these projects and you're rich and you've got that money. But the inside, what keeps the organisation going, is never funded. There's never that support given to local organisations, and that's what we do as well. So that culture of encounter, how we work together, and recognising our shared vulnerability, and therefore for us it's about committing to relationships of mutual learning and shared development, to accepting others as equals and ensure those diverse voices are heard. Doing together, doing with, not doing to. And finally, our plank of our own eco. Francis laid down that as a gauntlet. You know, we have to try and model integral ecology. So that requires changes to us, the way we do things, as a community, as an organisation. Pope Francis asks us to have a radical conversion of the heart. How do we put it together? How do we not just become deeply aware of the suffering of people and planet, but also to discover what each of us can do about it? So we've brought in more sense of reflection and discernment across the organisation, trying to reflect on what's our understanding of progress, how we change ourselves. It's also very practical things like, you know, reducing our own carbon footprints, flying less, which is a big challenge when you're an international organisation. And there's a lot there around, and also bringing it into the way in which we do our work through things like we've got an environmental stewardship tool, we've got things like different sustainable business practices. You heard from Brasilia, places like in Central America, doing lots of work with indigenous communities on things like agroecology approach, those sorts of things.
It can't have been easy getting to those planks, the kind of process of analysing CAFOD as an organisation. Is there anything that you could draw out that might be useful for this movement? What Anne said yesterday, that we're constantly reaching new beginnings. Are there any kind of learnings from the journey, I suppose?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a couple of them. Excuse me. I think it is important to look at ourselves and our own organisation in our context. So we do a lot of analysis of the context, but then it's about looking at us. What is it that we're contributing to this? And I'm sure, you know, you're the same as JMP commissions or different organisations. You're reflecting on how you operate, how you respond to the issues of the day. And it's not about navel gazing. It's about helping us to sort of think, well, how can we do this better? What are the power dynamics? You know, who are our allies? Who are the people that who are the voices that we listen to? Who are the voices that we're not? What are our own, you know, challenging ourselves in terms of our own ideological perspectives? You know, and that's why things like this weekend is really important, to be able to kind of reflect together. But it is also about recognizing, first of all, you know, with hope, to recognize that we also have power. You know, Paulo Freire's famous quote of, when the poor realise their power, only then can they realise their power, i.e. make it real. Mm. You know, actually recognising the power and the influence that we have is incredibly liberating. And sometimes it's a bit scary too. But it's about, so therefore, how do we use that? Where do we put that in? How do we... And we're faced with choices all the time. So, for instance... you know, one of the things about kind of reaching the most vulnerable. I was in Kenya just the other year visiting some of our work, and it would be really easy for us to spend a lot of money, literally within a stone's throw of an office in Nairobi. It would be really, we could do great work. It would be absolutely fantastic. Nobody would complain, but we don't. You know, we're in Marsabit and Isiolo, which is the north bit, part of literally a nine-hour drive on a road, 2 hours off-road. So it's literally, you do feel like, when is this going to end? But these are the most marginalised communities. They're pastoralist communities. They've been consistently, as the north always has been, consistently kind of, you know, done down by central government, excluded. And where they're with Caritas Marsabit. You know, Caritas Marsabit, the church in that diocese, and their social development programme, we're supporting them. We're making the effort to go further. So they're the kind of choices that you make. Another example would be, we have a thing called partner direct funding now, which is not easy, and we're moving towards it more and more. But traditionally, development organisations, you know, apply for funds from all sorts of places, and then it comes to us, and then we give it away. What we're also looking for is how can we support better those partner organisations that can apply directly for things like UN funding or other forms of institutional funding. And the money goes. The first conversation with my trustees, who have for a long time had been like, growth, capital has to be bigger. And they go, and then one went, so this money doesn't come to us? No, it goes straight. And it was a bit of a kind of shock to the system, but a really important lesson. Because actually, the money goes straight to partners, and we're investing in them. We're not. It's not us controlling it. It's not us doing it. So, but those kind of choices that we make about how we do things are quite key.
I think this partnership thing and listening to partners, I find very interesting. And I suppose within the Caritas family, there must be tensions. So the video we just watched, they were very progressive, and they're talking about the rights of nature. And I think a number of Catholics in this country would find it hard to talk about the rights of nature. So imagine across the Caritas family, you're all in different places on kind of political spectrums, on forms of engagement, and how you would approach injustice. How do you deal with those tensions, and how does that impact what you become as CAFOD?
Well, I think the starting point is about our own authenticity. You know, and I think this is perhaps a big lesson for all of us all the time, is really to have that authenticity and to think about how do we contribute to tackling the inequality in the world, and how do we contribute to sustaining inequality at the same time. You know, they're two sides of the same coin. And what can we therefore do to shift the dial a little bit? And across the Caritas network, you're absolutely right, there are very different approaches and very different models. There is a lot of work going on under the heading of fraternal cooperation, because I think that's a better model, but never mind, you know, we'll deal with Vatican language another day. But I do think that there is an important message there around actually localization is an important subsidiarity for the Catholic Church, recognizing what can we do to make sure that people really have the empowerment that they need. And there are the voices are very strong. A colleague from Syria, when I was in Rome in May, was speaking about you know, big organisations that come in and they don't even tell us where they're working, you know. And he went, not CAFOD. but there were people. I was going, well, there are people in this room. So, you know, how do you respond to this? You know, speaking to somebody else. And I think it's about having that dialogue. It's about being open to having those conversations. And I think, and in the church, we've got this synodal process going on, which is absolutely that culture of encounter, that ability to understand, put yourself in the shoes of other people, because to hear what they're saying, what their perspective, how does the world look to them, is going to be a challenge to us. The things like the rights of nature, I think, is really exciting. So we have a conversation, not you need to understand that nature has rights, but why does the rights of nature, what does that say to you? Is that frightening? What are you worried about in relation to that? And it's those kind of conversations of engagement that I think are really vital. And I know many of you are engaged in the synodal process, and that sense of how the church provides that space for that culture of encounter is a really important thing to reflect on. And it's interesting, because I was at an event, and his man was talking about the fact that he was reflecting on the fact that he does a lot of different things, his football team and mates in the pub and all that kind of stuff. And he said, but I've only just realised that the place where I experience the most diversity is my church. And yet it hasn't really kind of sunk that, you know, gosh, the world is in my church almost, and yet I'm not connecting with people in the way I should. So how can we use that synodal process to reach out? I mean, I when I was in Liverpool JNP all those years ago, we had pastoral formation at the end of the corridor, and, you know, and it was wonderful, but it was quite tense as well, because they had all the money and we had to kind of grovel, you know. But also, I think part of it was I was a bit envious about the fact that they were working with parishes in a way, and we had to struggle to get into parishes. But what the synodal process is is saying to us now is, actually, how can we work together as a church? So, you know, and a lot of the sort of issues that we might have been sort of battling about, you know, 30 years ago, are much more mainstream. We've got to see ourselves as part of formation. Mm. You know, being preaching the gospel, the work for justice and for peace is a constituent element of preaching the gospel. I mean, I can't quite remember which bit. You know, that it's an absolutely essential part of who we are. And so in some respects, maybe if there are less justice and peace paid people, but maybe the point is that we need to be actually the formation. We need to be part of the formation people. We need to be making sure that we're bringing issues as part of an ongoing formation, not just a separate category, as it were. So I think within the global Caritas framework, I think there's something really important about recognising the diversity. There's unity and strength in recognising that different people, different groups, different approaches work differently. To expect us all to do the same, frankly, that's duplication. Mm. So what is it that we are doing in collaboration and complementing one another? And that's why you need to have that kind of analysis to say, well, what is it that we're bringing? And I often get it, well, why isn't CAFFOLD working on X? Why isn't CAFFOLD working on Y? Well, because you're working on X and you're working on Y. And do we all have to do the same? But, you know, we try to support people, but it is about recognising that there's different ways of addressing different things. As long as we're talking to one another, as long as we're understanding that we're part of that garment, those threads that kind of weave together the most wonderful picture.
I think we've basically fallen off the script at this
stage. We have, totally.
I think
we'll, totally.
This stuff around the encounter and the learning and listening, the bit that I'm not hearing that worries me and I'm sure is there, is the kind of power analysis. And CAFFOLD is the funder, or if we were to talk within the kind of social justice movement within the Catholic Church in the UK, CAFFOLD is the biggest brand, you know, is a big fish there and makes the culture in some way. So how do you kind of work with that? How do you, I suppose, where does CAFFOLD fit within the movement? What does it contribute? I think the answer is love. Name that, and how might that change? Particularly for me, looking at this depressing context at the moment, like how bad things are getting. You know, how bad do things have to get before CAFFOLD moves even further to what I would call the radical?
Well, you liked that question, did you? I think there's a fair amount of radicalism in CAFFOLD. I mean, I think part of what, you know, trying to explain what our current strategy is to say, actually, we are a little bit different to how we might have been seen kind of, you know, years ago. And also, but actually, it is about us recapturing that sense of witness that I think we've always had, but perhaps being a bit stronger. I mean, you know, the work, the campaign on seeds that we're doing at the moment, I mean, it's interesting, 15 years ago I was doing it in Progressio. CAFFOLD wasn't interested, but now, you know, we're leading the way, which is great. And it's kind of, and I think there's also been a sense in which CAFFOLD's always been a little bit ahead of the curve as well in some instances. I mean, when I was the campaign coordinator at CAFFOLD 30 years ago, it was on the environment and development campaign. We were the only development organisation that was even interested in environmental issues. So there's always going to be some levels where we're more radical, or some things where we're less radical. That's just to do with that power analysis. And I think we are doing all the time that sense of, so what can we contribute? How can we work on this? I think we are quite what I'd call movement generous organisation. You know, there's been a lot of collaboration and partnership with the Justice and Peace, and we very much see ourselves as part of the church here in England and Wales. You know, we're part of the family. And I know that we can be a slightly big and lumbering organisation, but actually I think there's a huge amount of generosity in place. And I'd be interested in kind of what does it mean to be more radical, because I think we are talking about trying to dare to be different. We're talking about, a level of inequality. We're talking about structural justice. We're 2025, the Jubilee year, having conversations about debt, making sure that there's a trying to encourage a bigger campaign, not just with CAFOD, but across the Caritas network, pushing. There's conversations with the dicastery around that as well. So, debt is a big issue for us looking at as part of that Jubilee year. So I think there's a lot of stuff that we're doing that's radical. We are as well, we're the agency of the Bishops' Conference, where there'll be, quiet conversations that we'll have. We don't necessarily always, you're not always kind of like sitting on the barricades. Sometimes you have to think, am I about making noise or am I about making an impact? And sometimes, as you heard on that video, doing things quietly and doing things not in a big public hoo-ha can have a much bigger impact.
I'd agree that you are very movement generous. And just as a little experiment, in the room, if you've had any formation from CAFOD, would you just raise your hand if that's been part of any of your story? And I think that says something. So, yeah, Will and me. And children's liturgy. That was fantastic for keeping my family at church,
So I think the other thing for us is that, one of the biggest things that was our downloads in, not just in COVID, but generally, is our prayer and worship resources. Mm. And to be honest, that's also incredibly powerful, that's what makes We are the body of Christ here. We're trying to put our faith into practice, and that's an element of it too.
So maybe I'm going to ask you to kind of expand what you mean by we here, because we as CAFOD and then we as church in the UK. Yeah. And so Laudato Si is already 8 years old. Like lots of the in some ways it needs an update. How to phrase this? What sort of successes and challenges have there been in getting that environmental spirituality, getting that kind of theology, a theology of action, perhaps into the schools, to Catholic young people, into the seminaries? Where do you think CAFOD has played a role there that's been successful? Where are the challenges? And maybe another challenging question is, well, what can we do to help CAFOD? So I think I often come in with, I want CAFOD to do this, I want CAFOD to do that, because I see this and nobody else has the capacity. But what can the movement do to support CAFOD? Lots of those questions. Pick some of them.
Right. Well, I think I'd want to start by saying, it's not just CAFOD. The Laudato Si movement, who are here, we're very within the Laudato Si movement, and more generally. I think there is something really important for us about. Yes, we do. We all have to. Do what we can. So please, thank you for the support that you give to CAFOD, and thank you for the engagement that you do, because that does to achieving change. I meet with ministers, and I'm not just round the table because of how much money goes through our books. I'm there because I'm the voice of the Catholic Church, and that's politicians do some more about that this afternoon. But I mean, churches are incredibly active. We're going to have an interesting 2 years ahead of us, she says, trying not to be political. But the reality is that churches are going to be really active on hustings, on posing questions. We're working with the SVP on the election sort of work. So I think it's about making sure that the voices of the Catholic community, are out there talking about the wide range of issues. Talking about all issues around human dignity, around our economy, our place in the world. And I think, the one thing that politicians do say to me is, well, people aren't saying this. No one's telling me this on the doorstep. So do keep telling them. Do keep writing those letters. Do keep, making yourselves annoying, because that matters. Because when you stop telling them, they don't listen. And when you do tell them, so we got a letter quite recently from Andrew Mitchell, who's the Minister for Development, who basically said, could you please put this reply on your website because we're having so many letters, you know. And it's like, so, but what that did to us, I mean, Andrea can explain a bit more later, but what we were able to do then is to take their letter and to continue with that dialogue. But it then that was a dialogue that was created because of all of your efforts and writing to your MPs. Mm. Otherwise, they just don't take any notice. So it's really important to have your voices heard, really important to do that. And CAFOD, I think, is joining alongside others in being able to kind of help take that forward. So I think there's some of the lessons from that are around, you know, don't lose hope that your voice isn't effective. It really is. You don't necessarily hear that back, and perhaps we can be better at back, but it does make a difference. And I think it's also because it is a different voice. Mm. You know, there is something about, well, we expect Catholics to, having Catholics writing to us about the reality of the world is really important. It's not just about because you're writing. It's because churches are active. You know, how many churches here are doing food distribution, or advice, you know, and reaching out. You know, my parish does a food distribution. It supports a refugee family, all sorts of stuff. Churches are. So it's the authenticity behind our voice. Mm. You know, CAFOD, because it feels up to it. It speaks because we've got a raft of work because of partners. It's the same with yourselves. You know, when the church across the world is engaged, you know, the biggest, CAFOD as part of Caritas, it's second biggest as a development organisation, only to the Red Cross. Mm. So it's operated at a very kind of like divided level, but it's huge capacity, and I think people have to understand and acknowledge that.
Is there anything else that you would like to say before I ask people to have a little conversation amongst themselves? Is there anything that you are going to wish that you had had the chance to say because we fell off the script?
Right, I'm just going to, right. So what did I want to say? I wanted to. Authenticity and how each of us contributes. I think that's right. I think there's something about that encounter, listening to one another, putting yourself in the feet, absolutely vital. I think it's also for us, I think I've talked about voice, the voice agency and leadership of local people, and about being able to do that, to be able to give that space. So for instance, in the COP negotiations in Sharm last year, the CAFOD delegation was all partners. Mm. Caritas Bangladesh, Caritas Africa, the two CAFOD staff were there in a support role on policy and on technical social media support. It's about giving that voice. It's about giving that. And again, that's the choice. I was talking to a chief exec who said, oh, are you going to COP? Are you going to COP? He goes to the opening of an envelope, this guy. But it was like, are you going? I'm going, no, I'm not going. Why would I be going? Because it's our colleagues from Caritas Bangladesh or Caritas Africa that actually who people need to hear, and they were so busy, weren't they? They were just like going from one meeting to the next. Mm. Having their voices heard, I've never felt so proud. You know, that's what it's all about. I think the other thing is that you talked about the CAFOD journey. Making changes ourselves is not always easy. You know, sometimes it feels like it's a tanker. But it really matters. We're going through a process now to just sort of reflect on, well, what have the last 3 years meant to us in this new strategy? And, you know, there's an energy, there's an excitement. People across CAFOD talk about our common home. You know, they talk about it. And that means a lot to me because it's not just a strategy, it's not just a document that's on a shelf. It's being lived out. And if that strategy is being lived out, then our faith is being lived out, our witness is happening. So I think that authenticity really, really strikes me as really critical. And I just want to say, just before we go into a bit of chat, I think the hope that Brian talked about last night is absolutely critical. You know, we are people of hope. You know, and all around the world, and in our own communities too, we see such a lot of depression. We see such a lot of, you know, people who are facing such horrors of death and destruction and poverty, of inequality, of exclusion. And, you know, I'm reminded of Oscar Romero's famous quote about, well, my blood may be spilt, but my spirit lives on in the people. It's finding that spirit that we live on. How true is that? And, you know, we face... You know, my inbox is pretty depressing in terms of the situational updates that I get from all around the world, you know. And there's often times when I kind of go to bed thinking, you know, feeling the responsibility for colleagues in Sudan or, you know, all around the world, and just the sheer feeling humbled by, like, the people in Marsabit who are on absolutely at that front line, and feeling grateful that we're trying to shift the dial just that little bit. So there's something here about finding our hope, finding and seeing and being conscious of the Holy Spirit keeping us going, working with us. Because like that day in Pentecost, the disciples were locked in a room, frightened. How many times do we feel like we just want to lock ourselves in a room and feel frightened? But then the Spirit, Jesus came in, the Spirit came amongst them, and they were fired up, ready to go. And that's I think, part of it. And the SDGs provide us with the framework. Laudato Si provides us with nourishment. Our social teaching provides us with that fuel to keep us going. The water in our own wells, as Gustavo Gutierrez used to describe it as. And that's what we need to have, that depth. And we get it from one another. We get it from our relationships. We get it from our encounters. We get it from feeding the Spirit in one another.
Thank you, Christine, for all your insight and wisdom. What we're going to do now is have just a minute or two talking to people around you. The aim is to work out, well, what are you taking away from this morning? What are you taking into the rest of this weekend and the process that Anne described last night? What are you taking into back to your parishes, back to your work? You have only 5 minutes. Can I have 10 minutes?
Got coffee.
Coffee is a... Yeah, there's a five-minute gap in the timetable and no one knows what it is. We're having it. Right. So you have 2 minutes to talk to each other. What are you taking away from this morning's conversations?